advisory council report.
Does the, in relative to 120, there are a couple different looks at how 120 comes into the plan. Does some of this depend on what kind of decisions are made there?
A little bit, yes. The way that there's a 26-mile corridor, what I think CMAP is leaning to is breaking up the corridor into manageable regions, if you will. 120 would be one of those logical, manageable regions of how they would look at the corridor planning. Yeah, well, it could be somewhat on the what 120 could look like. So again, that'll be a CMAP led effort. There will, as we've discussed also in the past, will likely be an intergovernmental agreement between the tollway, CMAP, and local communities like county to cost participate in this endeavor. This really won't start until probably mid next year, mid 2013. That's when the funding becomes available. And then also on the 53-120 corridor, there will be an upcoming professional services bulletin item that we, the tollway, will be putting out to start advancing the next steps in the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council report. With the Iliana project, we continue to work with the Illinois Department of Transportation. IDOT has recently selected, I believe it was just this weekend, it came out with a notification that they selected a preferred route on the Iliana corridor. It's called D3, is the route name. Very glamorous, D3. But the it is now out and available for public comment about the route, IDOT's route selection. This is tier one of the environmental impact statement review process. So it's, they've now selected the corridor. It's open and available for public comment through November 13th. And at some point in time in the future, we'll be discussing the Iliana project with the board and providing some updates and having a discussion about our level of engagement on that particular project. So those are some of the ongoing activities with our Move Illinois program projects. Any questions on that?
Any questions? Mm-hmm. If not,
check Interstate 90 transit plan. We've already done that. We'll jump into the interchange policy discussion. So you know that we put out the interchange policy for after our last strategic planning committee. We put out the public comment. We did receive 20 public comments on this. 15 were from individuals. We had 5 from governmental entities. There were some positive comments, some negative, and 7 were just suggestions or items in the policy. I'll give you a kind of a brief a breakdown of the comments and what some of the suggested changes are to the policy. All the comments, I have to say this, were posted on our website for public review. It's a matter of what we've already decided to do with all of our policies. Take the comments, put them out there for public review. They've been out there since, I believe, early September. So I'm going to try to categorize the comments into 3 different sections. Those that are just comments only. These are just support for projects. There's some that were minor comments that require some clarification within the policy. I've made some of those changes. I've provided a copy of the policy to you. Within the policy itself, there are sections of it that are highlighted where some of the changes were made. And these are relatively minor. I'll explain what those two are. And then there's others that were, there were some more significant changes that were suggested. And we'll have some discussion input on those comments today. Some of those that were just, I would call them comments only, wasn't really any action required. There was support for specific interchanges. The one particular was Interstate 88, Route 47. There was a local push for this particular project. There was some that talked about, suggested some interchange improvements that we should contemplate within our system. Actually, some of the interchange improvements were not on our system. They were really Indiana and IDOT sections. We appreciate all comments, though. Other comments were just about things that we should consider as part of our overall project review process, right of way, multi-jurisdictional partnerships, and multimodal access, economic development, things that are already in policy that were reinforced by the comments that we received. And then was just to make sure that we continue to coordinate with the locals on traffic forecasting, which we haven't done already. Some of those comments I'm suggesting and changing the policy to address these. We received comments from Boone, Connelly, DuPage, County, and Hoffman Estates about clarification with the policy. There was a bit of a discrepancy the way some of the wording was within the policy about when we contribute and what the 50% It was just a matter of putting a reference back into one section of the policy. And that one was relatively simple. Village of Schaumburg submitted a comment suggesting that the way the policy was written, we did say that the applicants must submit letters of support for the project. Schaumburg suggested that it should say they should submit letters of support for the project because you may not get all communities to submit a written letter of support. My suggestion and the change I made in the policy was to basically say that they should submit letters of support, but those communities who do provide written letters of support may receive a greater level of priority consideration for future projects if that's acceptable.
Basically, acknowledging that not in every case will every surrounding community
that
jump on the bandwagon, but put more clarity there is that the preponderance of communities are in favor, it might weigh
right
in their favor.
And I think the concern here is that you might have multiple neighboring communities all desirous of access, and they would not want to put
separate interchange, separate projects.
So
it seemed reasonable, but if they do have letters of support from the neighboring communities, give it higher priority consideration, so it's a very minor change in policy. From the states also submitted some clarifications, and this was, I thought, was a good suggestion, that we already did say that we may consider a higher level contribution if there's interchange provide access to a strategic regional arterial route. So these are the main priority arteries within the within the region. And if their suggestion was, it's not just about access to that, if the crossroads is a strategic regional arterial route, we should also consider if there are parallel SRAs to the north and the south or surrounding there, if this interchange provide access, enhanced access to an SRA. So I thought that was a reasonable request and change, so we made that change to say those within close proximity also. Hoffman Estates, obviously they had a lot of comments that they shared, and I appreciate a lot of things that they did pass along, as well as everybody else's. Other times when we they requested that other items that we add to the list of when we consider a greater level of contribution. We already had a lot of things in there about multimodal. It says specifically maybe to also consider the multimodal part about pedestrian and bicycle access to a project. So consider that part of the realm of multimodalism. So I made a very minor change in that section to say multimodal, including bicycle and pedestrians. This is another comment from Hoffman Estates. In Hoffman Estates, we've been working with for a long time. Actually, the person who wrote the comments used to work here at the tollway, so it's very familiar with what we've done. Suggests that as we establish a toll rate, that we work in collaboration with the community to look at what those toll rate evaluation parameters would be on any project. So as we look at corridor type of approach for funding interchange or a specific location where the rates may go out of the norm, that we collaborate with the community to so they get an understanding of what those rates might be, and then also to understand what the impacts might be if the rates go to certain levels, what those impacts may or may not be on their parallel or local road systems. So it's really working that in. So as we establish the rates, we will do that in collaboration with the community. So those are the minor comments. We did have another one, just more of a for a point of discussion. It was a comment that came in from both the Village of Itasca and DuPage Mayors and Managers Association, and they were seeking clarification relating to the application of the proposed policy on new or expanded roadways. Really, it was a request for consideration of how the local contribution will be defined on these new projects, especially the Elgin O'Hare Western Access. What the Village of Itasca, they requested consideration of removing a local share of the policy if there is a road that's going to be tolled as part of the project. While I understand that, appreciate the request, you know, I'm not recommending a change to the policy. What's important about the policy is that we have to have a necessary portion of the cost to make sure the project is financially viable. Financially viable can mean different things for different projects. And this, you know, for the Elgin O'Hare is one particular project. If we advance the Illinois 53 or the Illinois Expressway financially viable might mean something different for those projects. So rather than trying to get into specifics about what financially viable is, we left it, I'm suggesting that we leave it broad and general to say we just need to make sure the project is financially viable. With the Elgin O'Hare in particular, and also really with the 53 project now, what we've been doing, and I have to do with the Indiana, is really kind of working with the all the communities and the partners and stakeholders. With the Elgin O'Hare in particular, we had the Governor's Advisory Council that was established back in 2010. We worked through 2011. They provided us with a report that laid out some financing terms of things that would be acceptable to the advisory council that was established. So we've already kind of established what those parameters are. We've done the same thing with the 53 project, had some, received some input from all the communities, both through the Blue and the advisory council on that particular project, talk about what mechanisms we should pursue for financing. So in regards to a change in the policy, I'm suggesting that we just leave it as is, keep it general, make sure it's financially viable. So I don't know if there's any thoughts or suggestions on that discussion.
Let me just ask, were they looking at situations that would arise outside of the plan for the bypass, the work that we're planning that would come sometime in the future, or are they talking about this plan itself?
A little bit of both. For future projects, there may be additional access changes required or requested, maybe not required, requested of the local communities at later dates outside of what we're planning for the Elgin O'Hare projects. That was suggested instead. The thought was come up with we close the funding gap and that's it. It's forever and ever. So that was one thing that was brought up where, you know, it would be hard to do that. We've got a financially viable project working on the $300 million funding gap. So that's how it was proposed. Suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think this is also, I guess, going back to some of the corridor council up there, that's why we bring in the mayors for these quarterly meetings to talk about these issues, about financing. We're not doing this in a vacuum. It's really still bringing everybody along.
Mm-hmm. Any questions or comments on that particular one? I think that's good, Council Rocco, to have, you know, a basic guideline that remains in there and that, without getting overly specific.
One last comment that we received for maybe some discussion, thought, or input really came from the Boone County government. It was multiple Boone County City Belleville that also jointly signed a letter that came to us. They also put a lot of thought into the review comments. Really what Boone County, I'm going to really paraphrase about a two-page letter into one sentence as much as I possibly can. What they are basically doing is seeking a change to have the tollway serve as what was in quotes in their letter as a bank and to extend our net toll revenue recovery period beyond the newly established 15-year period. Because the earlier policy, we said we need to recover tolls in a 10-year period. After some discussion with the council or the committee, we decided we're going to extend that repayment period to 15 years in the rural areas. What Boone County was suggesting is that we extend it to a 20-year period. I'll give you some of the staff analysis, and this is really some work that we've done in the past to find it on this as well. The recovery period, to further explain this, the recovery period in the policy doesn't factor in the interest that was necessary to finance the project, so we actually lay out the full funding of the project. Recovery period doesn't factor in the interest that we have to pay to finance these projects. That also doesn't factor in the maintenance of the roadway, doesn't factor in the operations, eventual toll replacement that we will ultimately incur with these projects. So the recovery period was really just based on what we thought was a reasonable time frame to recover our investment back. Any thoughts on that?
Just reiterate, yes, the recovery period was intended to provide a kind of benchmark for recovering the principal, and that we knew that there were costs that over time we would have to recover, that we would not really fully recover for 20, 25 years or maybe maybe even longer depending on time. That's why we limited it to such a short period of time.
And I think we've made an adjustment, as you say. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a considerable one to look at situations where the 10-year thing may not work for very much. So I think we've come a long way on that as it is.
And some of the other reasons why, you know, from the staff side of things, we've tried some of these extended reimbursement periods. That was another one of the suggestions that we act as a bank and we provide basically repayment terms that extend over multiple years. We found that that hasn't really been successful for us in the past when we try to continue to recover, especially when the project is out there, built and open and operational for many years. Components of the interchange policy right now puts the onus on the applicant to develop a financial plan. The financial plan can include suggestions for a more flexible reimbursement time frame that are consistent with previous intergovernmental agreements. We have had some intergovernmental agreements that have had different repayment time frames that go from, you know, basically to the time the project is complete. And some have gone, you know, 1 year post-completion with the interchange company in particular. It's regular payment schedules, and then when the project is complete, the last payment is due 1 year post-completion.
So is there any other thinking on this? Our thought was really that we tried to build into the communication that we previously had in this committee enough flexibility in the policy while still protecting, you know, the tollway. We are not necessarily set up to be a lender. You know, certainly we do work with communities to, you know, we've done different financing scenarios on different projects where sometimes the community leads and issues their own bonds or, you know, other things that we think that the flexibility is there. You know, it really would be whether we want to become a lender, and I don't know how well that works out for us in the long run. We can't exactly roll it up and repossess it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think experience has shown to some degree that when people start looking at it as a lender,
yeah,
the policy definitely doesn't work at that point. So.
It seems like this is the right. I don't mean to rush us, but
no, that's fine. And then the last bullet point is our preference is for self-financing because that really shows that there's a true commitment on both sides.
It sounds like we're all in agreement on that.
Yep. Yes. Great. So next steps, committee to approve policy. If I guess we do that today. And then what I'll do is distribute the policy to our, you know, the usual characters, council, mayors, counties, and the agencies who have responded, and we'll continue to have local coordination with communities.
So I'm going to ask the committee to approve the policy, but I want to just preface that by saying I think the fact that we're posting the draft policies and looking for comments has been beneficial. I think we've gotten some good suggestions. We've made some adaptations based on those, and so pleased with the process, I think, that we put in place. And I think we have a good product at this point, so at this point I look for a motion to approve the policy and send it on to our full board.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the policy we recommended to the board. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the proposition carries, and we recommend it to the board.
And I know, Rocco, you're very good at this, but I'm assuming you've already done it or will do it, is getting back to organizations or people who made the comments explaining if we've adopted them, if we haven't adopted them, what the reason is if we haven't. So
that's my point.
People would not be surprised when this comes to the board and their recommendations.
That's my plan. John O'Hara, who's sitting quietly in the back corner over there, helped with the policy. That's hopefully John heard that because he's going to help.
Well, good.
Rocco,
it's going to trickle down to him.
Right.
To you and John and the staff, though, I want to say I think you did a very nice, thoughtful job of the analysis and characterizing it for the committee as well. So appreciate
Thanks.
Your effort.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm
so we're ready to move on to the next item.
Yes.
Up next will be John Benda, the General Manager of Maintenance and Traffic, along with Diana Stewart, Senior Marketing and Communications Manager. Together they're going to present what we would propose to be the amended traffic generator and specific service sign policy guide, which is a long way of saying billboard sign. John's team is really responsible for the fabrication and installation of signs along our roads, really the whole maintenance of of the corridor, and it does a great job for us there. And then Diana's team would be instrumental in the marketing of this program should it meet the board's approval. So we are running a little bit behind. We want to have ample time for discussion here. So I will just ask the two of you to be mindful of that as you move through the presentation. But this is really, you know, an opportunity for us to support economic development in local communities across our corridor. Thank you.
Good morning. We will attempt to breeze through things and not dwell. I did want to do a little bit of a background for the benefit of the board and the committee, and a little bit of signing 101, because I think it's important that you understand what we can do and what we can't do throughout our system, and how this program will only apply to rural environments as defined in our policy. So let me just do that quickly. In 2007, the TOEI launched a pilot lodging-only program on the I-90 corridor. This was at the urging of legislators along that corridor. And it was a pilot only. And the good news is it has been successful. We have five interchanges where we have significant participation by local lodging facilities. And we have recently spoken with all those people and told them that we are looking possibly to expand to a permanent program, and that their fee structure may increase, and they did not balk at all in terms of their continued participation. We only had one lodging facility that dropped off, and that was on Route 25 on the east side of the Fox River, and actually under today's policy, Route 25 would not qualify because that's really an urban environment, but I'll touch on that a little bit more. 2009, the board adopted the TOEI's first ever sign policy, long-winded, called the Traffic Generator Information Sign Policy, and that actually did formally provide for the pilot program. In 2012, this year, we are proposing an amendment to the policy to expand the specific service, or what we commonly call blue board signing, over portions of our system. TOEI is guided by the Toll Highway Act. The actual act talks about signing and what we are supposed to do relative to signing for local communities. The most important document is the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control. This is a federal document published and updated regularly by the Federal Highway Administration that sets standards to preserve and promote public safety by safely guiding traffic on all highways in the country. Our concern is obviously for interstate highways. Blue boards, or specific service signs, as they call them, are specifically defined in that manual and are defined for rural segments of the road. And the manual presumes that services typically identified by blue board signs are customarily available in urban areas. It also requires specific separation from other signs, and specifically requires that blue boards be ground mounted. Okay, the Illinois supplement to MUTCD also guides us on signs, and that's a technicality. The federal manual has to be adopted by each state in order for it to be effective in each state, so Illinois does adopt the federal MUTCD, and they are allowed to make exceptions. There are no exceptions relative to blue boards in Illinois. And we have our own policy. So those are the documents that guide us in terms of our looking at signing on the TOEI system. Urban versus rural is very critical. Blue board programs are intended for rural roads, rural interstates, four lane, two in each direction, a lot of space between intersections. They're outside of urban areas. There's adequate spacing for signing. I mentioned the spacing earlier. The urban section is typically characterized by high traffic volumes, high traffic amount entering and leaving at the various interchanges, and visual clutter, the existence of other distractions that are attracting people's attention, including billboards and other advertising along a corridor. This probably shows the issue more clearly than trying to describe it with numbers. This is a graphic of our system. On the far right is the Tri-State Tollway, and you'll note that on the entire Tri-State, there's only one interchange that, by according to the federal guidelines, would qualify, and that's the far north end, just south of Wisconsin. On the Jane Addams, and there's one error. This is actually Randall Road right here. Randall Road is right on the border between what we would consider rural and what we would consider urban. So we actually would consider that as blue, but we will have to specifically review that interchange because there are some limitations in terms of space. But essentially, we're rural through there for purposes of blue board signing. On I-88, the breakpoint is actually between Orchard Road and Route 31. So part of Aurora is considered rural from the signing policy perspective. We would have some freedom to install blue boards for Orchard Road, but because of other sign clutter as you move further east, we would not be able to do anything for Route 31. And then the south extension of 355, which is considered by our policy to be a rural segment of our system. There are some 20 different interchange opportunities potentially for this type of signing. Key elements of the policy amendment. One, I keep reinforcing, but it applies only to rural locations. The installation would be predicated on confirmed participation and formal submittal of applications from potential participants. The lodging and attractions would have to be located in close to the interchange and meet a set of defined criteria. And there would be a formal application process, which we require for any kind of sign request that's being made of the agency. We want it in writing. We want a formal request. And before we talk about the fee structure, one of the things that sets this program apart from other signing that we do, these programs, which we are talking about lodging only and we're talking about attractions, those two specific services, they are fee-based, so there would be fees paid by whoever submits the application to participate in the program, and Diane will talk about that a little bit, but I wanted to give you an idea of the cost up front to support Diana's discussions. This is the typical cost and estimate of what it would take to do one interchange in the system, and you'll notice on the bottom right, it's about $60,500, or about $60,000. These are large blue background signs mounted on I-beam supports in foundations. There would be one for each program in advance of a full interchange, and then there would be one on each of the ramps in each direction. So a total of four signs, two ramp signs and two mainline signs. That's if you had full participation with six logo panels on each sign. In our environment in the rural area, we've taken a look at what's out there. We don't think we would have full participation right away. So there is some flexibility in only installing one sign, perhaps, and splitting the designation for lodging and attractions on one sign as we transition into the program. But let me pass on to Diana and have her talk a little bit about the fee structure, and then we'll kind of wrap things up and answer questions you might have. I did bring along, and I meant to mention this, this is the manual on uniform traffic control devices. This is my prop for today. This document is published by the Federal Highway Administration approximately every 6 to 8 years. And it has everything you would ever want to know and more about signing, striping, marking, highways and parking lots and toll roads. Actually have their own section in this manual for the first time ever. This is the 2009 edition. So with that, Diana, would you run through the fee structure?
Thanks, John. Morning. Could I have the...
No.
Thank you. As John had mentioned earlier, taking a look at these rural areas, we realized that it's unlikely that we would have full six logo panels at each of the locations. So with that in mind, what we did is we came up with two different pricing structures. Option A is based on having an initial outlay of $2,000 for year one, and then subsequent years at $950 per year, so that at the end of a 15-year cycle, which is the life cycle of these boards, we will have generated just over $61,000 based on four of the six logo panels being used on a particular board.
So these are the fees that we would would charge an individual hotel or
right, and an individual lodging facility or an attraction would be charged again, this fee. Now, as you can see, there's two different totals here under option A. $61,000 is based on having four logo panels on the board, and $91,000 is based on having all six. But it's highly unlikely that we would have that at all the locations. We then put together another pricing structure, which had a larger upfront cost of $4,600. The premise there being that we may want to consider having more funds available to offset the fabrication and installation costs of these boards, because again, the boards are costing us $6,000 for one program at one interchange. The other thing that we looked at in setting these prices was we looked at what are other departments of transportation and other tolling agencies doing. And the fees range from $750 a year to $3,500 a year. And most of those locations charge that same fee year after year, whereas we're front-loading it for the year one and then dropping the fee for the subsequent 14 years. In looking at these two costing structures, we're recommending that we go with option A for a couple of reasons. Option B, although it provides a greater offset to the fabrication installation costs, we think that it would probably not have as great of a participation as option A, and that option A really serves more of a goodwill feature for any participants. It does not take into account the time value of money. It's just a flat fee based on today's rates. And as you can see, over the course of 15 years, it would basically cover the cost of fabrication and installation. So what are the actions that are required? We've got to look at approving the signed policy amendment, understanding that that needs to be posted for public comment before it can be approved. We need to have an approved pricing structure to move forward on this, and then we need to make sure that we have the capital funding within the 2013 budget. So as we move forward, we understand what we've got to do as of today is we've got to get the policy, this draft policy, posted online. We'll have it posted for a 21-day period so that on November 7th, we will then capture all the comments that came in, and we will post those online for customers to read, and then we will re-present this to the planning committee at the next meeting.
So I think probably, you know, what's the first question that we would ask the board to tackle? We've kind of assumed in this that there's a desire to expand or confirm that move from a pilot program to an actual program for blue boards, and our recommendation around that, is that something that everybody is comfortable with, that we would move away from our, what is it now going on, 7-year pilot program?
It's about a 6-year pilot right now. And the pilot program was put together quickly just to see if there was really interest out there. Prior to that time, the only blue boards that existed on the toll road were identifying the location of the oases, okay, and those still continue to today. And actually, the signing on the oases predated any MUTCD in existence, and that's why they're overhead and they're on gantries. Under today's policy, there's some question as to whether you would install them on overhead trusses like they are right now. But the basic question is, should we move forward with this program? Or is this something that the toll road should not be involved in doing? A full blue board program, similar to what DOT runs, includes fuel, food, lodging, potentially pharmacy, and camping. We're not suggesting that we bite off that huge bullet at one time. We're suggesting, since we have a demonstrated interest in lodging, that we float that as an idea for the board's consideration. And we tossed in attractions as well, because attractions provide an opportunity for commercial traffic generators, commercial ventures, to participate. And we have heard from the Illinois tourism people and others that that there would be interest in that as well. So that's where we came up with the two specific services that we are recommending for board consideration.
So is there anything on the policy itself? Is it?
Well, the one concern I would have just been under the period of attractions is simply how that's, whether you can define that in a way so that not, I think a lot of people, a lot of different interests are going to consider themselves an attraction. But I think you can almost get overburdened on the attraction side if you're not careful with how that's defined. a hotel is a hotel is a hotel.
Yeah, Appendix A, we did anticipate that question, Director, and we have proposed in the policy allowable types of attractions. And it's not all-encompassing, but it at least provides staff some good, solid guidance on the kind of attractions. It would be in your Appendix A that we passed around to you. For example, amusements, park, fairground, recreational entertainment complex, antique shopping areas, arena performance centers, botanical, historic sites, historic shopping districts, golf courses for the first time would apply. Museums, orchards, river excursions, shopping centers, and natural areas, wildlife areas, parks, state natural parks. So we've given that as a suggestion to be adopted in the policy so that staff then has some guidance to operate under.
So let me just, let's say historical district, which may not be a private profit-making entity or whatever that would like to be advertised. Would the same fee structure apply to them, say a 501c3, or would it apply to anybody else?
Yes. And that you'll notice on it, you've traveled through the state on some of IDOT signing, you'll see local shopping districts or historic districts commonly covered on blue board signs.
On your trial system that you did on I-90, I think you said, what were the first year fees and the ongoing fees?
The fees actually varied based on what it was costing us to install temporary signing. Those signs were installed on wooden posts, so they were less expensive, but it would range anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000 or $3,000 per facility. It also depended on how many there were. If there were three, then we put up a sign for three. We divided the installation cost by three.
So the option A here, you think, is a fairly reasonable, from the perspective of the possible advertiser, that's a pretty darn reasonable approach?
We think it is. It's more than what IDOT charges, and for those who have signs on IDOT, they may want to point that out. But IDOT hasn't changed the rates in a long time, and we think it's fair based on what we see other states and other toll roads charging for similar services.
Yeah, any comments or questions on the two options there, or the fee structure?
Just that when it comes to the Oasis situations,
yes.
What sort of anticipated negative impact drawing customers away from the Oasis by advertising their competition would have?
An excellent comment, Director. And informally, in the past, when blue boards were discussed, the informal position of the board was not to get into fuel and food blue board systems because of the potential competition with the Oasis. In terms of the Oasis agreements, there is no conflict between a blue board program. But it has been the previous board's direction over many years, since I've been here a long time, to not compete with the Oasis. So
basically you're saying this policy would not include restaurants or gas stations, so that in effect there should be no negative impact. Right?
That is correct.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Is the option A that's recommended, is that resonate?
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll move forward with posting this and kind of go through the same comment process that we did for the interchange policy, and there might be some revisions that we'll recommend or clarifications, but I think that has, as you mentioned, Director, it's been a good process to get that public comment. So nice job, both of you.
Thank you.
On this, I know it's always some work to put these things together, and I think our directors all want copies of the manual to take home with them.
Director, one last comment, if I could, just in terms of the third element is in terms of budgeting for this. There is no money currently planned or recommended in the budget, so we will be talking to finance, and the amount that we're recommending would be $500,000 for each of the programs. I gave Mr. Kelch a heads up before the meeting. He assured me that he I'm sure that I could probably sacrifice something somewhere else in order to come up with $1 million to do this. Time-wise, we really actually wouldn't be spending money until the latter part of 2013, because it will take us a while to get things together and get contracts established. So, and our plan would be not to go out and install six panel boards everywhere in hopes that somebody would come. We will literally, once we get confirmation from local participation, we would then install a sign appropriate to that location. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank
John, you. Is there a way that we actually end up measuring the effectiveness of this once we've done it? I'm thinking about the critics who will say whatever they will say.
I mean, you can subjectively by surveying your participants. I mean, one measure is certainly the continued participation of those that opt into the program. They will tell you if it's effective for them or not. What we heard resoundingly from the pilot participants on I-90 was, oh, geez, don't take it away. And they know that they're paying under market for those things right now, and they've indicated that an increase in fee did not shy or deter them at all.
Okay. It's also a service to the customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this whole program is consistent with the strategic direction that was provided to the agency with regard to economic development and community outreach and outreach to the region. And again, it's only focused on rural areas, and I need to stress that, because this program could generate a whole lot of interest in an area where we simply cannot put signs. So that needs to be clear from the onset, that there may be some people in some portions of the perhaps South Tri-State who may want to come and visit and talk about bluebird signs on the Tri-State, and we're just not, with the exception of the one location by Wisconsin, we just can't do it.
Yeah, I think it's important to say that basically this policy, I think, would be have a positive benefit on economic development, and it'd be good for our customers, the wayfinding, you might say, that sense as well. I think it needs to be clear that we're not making a profit on this.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Okay, moving on. The agenda, we have a possibility of additional items. I have none. Is anyone else? Okay. Unfinished business, I believe we have nothing there. New business, any new business? Okay, there being none, I don't believe we're in need of an executive session for this committee today. So that would move us into a position to entertain a motion to adjourn. Do I have such a motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you one and all.
Thank you.
Thank you.